Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is round three's recap for this week's Memorial, and what a day it was. Joining me to break it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP. The K in KP stands for chaos.
It does. Sorry, I'm looking up statistics here. This was, I don't know how you feel, Rick. This is one of the weirder days I can remember covering of the last few years on the PGA Tour.
How so?
Well, it just was, it was chaotic. Like, if you would have told me at any point over the first 5-6 hours of the day that Rory would co-lead at the end of the day, I would have thought, like, no chance, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was already engraving Hideki's name on the trophy at one point.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll talk about this, but him starting birdie, it felt like Vince Carter territory.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we'll get to that in a second. Let's get rid of some of the early movers, because those were where a lot of the low scores came from. Scottie Scheffler gets a little bit of a bounce back, 4 under 68. Still has not putted well, probably too far back. He's going to be, well, maybe not. He's going to be 5 shots off the pace. We'll get to how many guys are actually within arm's reach here. But good to see Scottie card a low number despite still not making anything.
Yeah, still not making anything, Rick. You can check me on this. I think he's first in the field from tee to green and last in putting.
He's definitely last in putting. I will have to pull that back up real quick.
So this, if he is first in the field, and I think he is, this would be his third consecutive tournament in which he finished first in the field from tee to green and did not win the tournament, which is, at some point, that's a problem, right? You know, we talked about this the other day. Like, he's both underachieving and overachieving at the same time. That's what happens when you're first in the field in tee to green every week and last in the field in putting. I mean, I tweeted out his strokes gained tee to green versus strokes gained putting numbers for the last 6 events. It's just a joke, like, how diametrically opposite they are. And he was awesome. I mean, it was interesting. I was reading his transcript, and he said, I didn't want to get out of bed today. Wasn't feeling great. Body was tired. No chance to win. I don't think he said those words, but essentially. And somehow I came out here and hit it great. And you're like, yeah, somehow, because you're freaking Scottie Scheffler and you're the best ball striker on the planet right now. So I don't know. It's kind of weird times for somebody who's the number one player in the world. You know, to not be kind of capitalizing on these events.
He was first in tee to green today. He is 8th for the week, 10.1 strokes gained tee to green.
Okay. I was thinking he was, I must have had that wrong then.
I mean, listen, give it 18 more holes, he'll probably be first in tee to green. So,
see, on DataGolf, they have him as first.
They calculate it differently.
Okay. So,
PGA Tour has him 8th.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they do. They, because, like, they'll, like, I think, like, things like shots from the fringe, which, you know, may or may not be considered putts by one entity, get considered putts by another. They do it relative to strength of field and stuff like that. So just calculate a little bit differently.
Okay, so I wasn't necessarily
You're not wrong.
It's just, I mean, and the whole premise is like the point remains essentially.
Correct.
I mean, how do you feel about Scheffler? I gave my bid on him on Tuesday. What are your thoughts on him?
I think that I think he's a problem. I think the putting's a problem, but it's also, I think it's more mental than anything, because he is, when he got off to that really, when he won like his, that 4 out of 6, he was putting really great. I mean, I think I might've said it, I don't know if it was on air or off air, but like I watched him hit some putts that didn't even sniff the hole on Friday. And that was that's not a physical thing. That's like a mental thing, but good to see that he's not letting it get into the rest of his game. And this is a good thing. Obviously I wish he putted better, but if you can be like the worst putter in a field and still be in the mix or still pile up top 8 finishes, like that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think ultimately it is. And again, I've used this comp several times, but it's kind of Vijay Singh-ish, right? Like he reminded me of Vijay Singh right now. And that's a great comp because Vijay Singh won, 3 majors, 34 times on tour, and did it without – I'm with you because, like, you look at his last 3 years, he's not a bad putter. He's not an elite putter. Like, I think people would be surprised that he's not as good of a putter as somebody like Rory or DJ or somebody like that. But he's a good enough putter, and he's just, like, I think kind of lost right now.
Yes, I think it is very, very mental at the moment. Keegan Bradley gets a nod here because he shot the round of the day 65. So he goes 74, 73, 65. He moves up 52 spots. He's in a tie for 9th heading into Sunday. That also includes a bogey on 18, which has played difficult all week long. I don't think Keegan's going to win this. He's only 2 shots back, but he did the Keegan thing on Saturday where he led the field in strokes gained approach, and then he found a hot putter for 18 holes, which is why Keegan is one of statistically, like, he's like your first round leader at a much more higher clip than a lot of other guys. 'Cause he can do this. He can give you like 18 holes of just scorching hotness at a time.
Yeah. Do we have okay, let's see here. So the afternoon was more than a half stroke harder than the morning. So I think that played into it,
which I think is, but that's the smallest gap of the week.
Is it really?
Thursday was 1.25. Friday was nearly 2 shots harder, and this was a half a shot harder. So that's the smallest week.
But you've also got a kind of a imbalanced field.
You don't have 2 full waves with like everyone's just going off of one every 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a little bit weird, but, yeah, I mean, Keegan was awesome. And I think what he did on Saturday, Rick, is a little bit of foreshadowing for what we could see on Sunday from somebody. I mean, there's these different templates that we get for Sunday finishes on the PGA Tour. And this, to me, is one of the more compelling ones. There's only about, like, I don't know, I should write these down, but there's like 8 templates. It's like... player who's never won before being chased by, you know, superstar. So there's like 8 of them. And the one this week is generational player has a tiny lead over like just a litany of like other great players. And what we saw from Hideki on Friday and Keegan on Saturday was, hey, you can go out and shoot 65 on this golf course. You can also go shoot 77 like Justin Suh did. So that makes me excited for, you know, Rory trying to hold off somebody who can do what Keegan did on Saturday on Sunday while kind of in contention.
Yeah, I like that. I would also like to hear the 8 templates. So whenever you want to tweet those out or text them to me, I'd be very.
I'll workshop them with you before I put them out into the world.
I actually just kind of want to take the rest of this like as we saw it happen today. So we'll get into all the big names. I mean, there's absolutely a million guys at the top of the leaderboard, and we'll kind of just take it with the way the coverage went down. So we'll take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. As coverage gets started and the final group goes out, it's Justin Suh and Hideki Matsuyama. They could not have gone in more opposite directions, KP. Hideki birdies holes number one and two. Justin Suh goes bogey, bogey, double bogey out of the gate. And our final group is just on polar opposites of the spectrum.
Well, it was crazy because Suh, who had the overnight lead on Friday, and Keegan, who started the day T61, were tied after Suh played three holes, which, I mean, they were 11 shots apart, and then all of a sudden they're tied at like 215 on Saturday, which is just like insane. And then, you know, on the Hideki front, so, I mean, we talked about this. Like, we saw that coming a little, not 77, but we saw it coming a little bit with Suh just because the putting was kind of out of control. And that's a hard spot to be in, leading the Memorial with all those guys around you after 36. Like, that's just tough. Like, that's really hard on a difficult golf course. The Hideki thing was more surprising to me because he goes birdie, birdie, and you're like, okay, even if he doesn't, like, boat race everybody, it's still feels like he's kind of going to be the guy and be a little bit in control at the end of the day. And then it just came unraveled. I mean, he shoots 36 going out, which is fine. You know, like, he's still kind of in control there, but then bogey, birdie, double bogey. I mean, it kind of got out of hand there, and he shoots 39 coming in. That was a triple. The six was a triple on the 12th hole. That was a mess. Just horrible tee shot. Hit his drop in the bunk. I mean, it was awful. So I was surprised by that. Hideki's not been playing like extraordinarily good golf, but when somebody of his caliber kind of gets into that, you know, driver's seat, you don't expect them to completely eject like that.
He got it to 9 under. Just for reference, our lead right now through 54 is 6 under par. So he got this to 9 under par. The Justin Suh stuff, you know, I was expecting the regression, but how it happened out of the gate was a little bit surprising. I was expecting, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in the middle of the fairway on two and missed badly left on three, which is, you know, he's got, again, middle of the fairway, second shot, hits it 40 yards short into the water. I mean, it has to be nerves. It absolutely has to be nerves. A guy in the final group on a Saturday for only the third time in his career, and this is by far the biggest.
Yeah, for sure. He had to, I didn't see the final numbers, but he had to be close to last in the field in approach play. I mean, it was bad. It was
64th out of
66.
Yeah, 66.
So, yeah, there you go. It just, you know, I think all this stuff is, you know, learning. Like, it's feeling, you guys talk about this all the time. It's feeling different things in that contention than you normally feel on a Saturday at a PGA Tour event. And then taking the step from there and taking the step from there and then eventually winning. So long-term, no harm, but in the short term, it was kind of tough to watch.
So that early exchange, and then Hideki making those, you know, two bogeys around the turn, and then really just, you know, carving it up early on his second. It opens the door for everybody. And one of those guys was Patrick Cantlay, who makes a birdie early on number four and then makes kind of a bizarre triple on six where he tries to go for the green out of the left-hand rough, leaves it well short into the water, doesn't play the hole particularly well after that. I mean, he's going to be two shots back going into the final round with a triple on the card and losing 3.2 strokes putting this week.
Yeah, it's
he could be five shots up right now.
Yeah, I know. It's a little bit of the Hideki thing where if you would have said, okay, neither Hideki nor Cantlay is going to kind of be in control of this tournament at the end of the day. If you would have told me that after they both got through like the first four or five holes, I'd have been like, that's dumb. Like that's a guarantee. I guarantee one of those two, one of them, if not both of them, will be in the driver's seat. And neither of them are. And I don't know. Yeah. I think Rory sort of held his round together with his putter in a way that Cantlay, you know, didn't. And that's maybe the difference. But Cantlay's still in a good spot. It's not like he's four or five back. He's just two back. He's playing late. I still think we'll get to the betting, but I think his odds are the most compelling out of the guys at the top.
Well, as now Hideki's going the wrong way, Cantlay's going the wrong way. A couple of infiltrators making their way up the board. Mark Hubbard, even par round of 72, but he bogeyed 16, 17, and 18. He was at 8 under at one point. I'll throw David Lipsky into the conversation because he also got it. He got it to 9 under, made bogeys on 13, 17, and 18. So it was a magnet back to 6 under. Guys were able to get up to eight up to nine, but that gravity, that magnetic force brings them back down to the field.
Well, you know, when these guys were leading, it actually made me think of, you know, the Memorial's produced some interesting winners over the years. You've had William McGirt. You've had didn't David Lingmerth win here?
That's or right. Yeah.
Nearly won here or something. It's produced some like kind of not if for a tournament that has a ton of stars and superstars playing in it. It's produced some outcomes that you might not have expected. So that was sort of what I was thinking about when you had David Lipsky up there and he finishes bogey, bogey. Mark Hubbard up there, he finishes bogey, bogey, bogey. That closing stretch, man, it's so hard. Like, it's insane. 16, 17, 18. At one time I looked, they were playing as three of the four hardest holes on the course, and they both just kind of, like, capitulated to that that closing kick and kind of gave away, It's easy for me to sit here and say they gave stuff away when that's like just such a difficult stretch, but they had a real chance to both kind of be playing in the final pairing on Sunday, which is kind of where you want to be if you're somebody like that that's trying to win for the first time on the tour.
16, 17, and 18, they finished the day as three of the four hardest holes on the golf course, and then it was 2015, David Lingmerth beat Justin Rose in a playoff to win
there you go.
Memorial. So we've got more challengers coming here. Victor Hovland got out a little bit earlier than most, posted a 3-under 69. That just got better as the day went on. He played his final four holes, KP, at 3 under par. So you talk about
sick.
Yeah, those. So that's 3 under on holes that were playing essentially, let's call it a quarter of a shot over par combined. So he gains 3.25 strokes on the field in four holes.
Insane. To make a 2 on 16 is nuts. How many birdies were there on 16 today? There couldn't have been.
Do you want to guess?
66 players in the field. I'll say there were three.
Five.
Okay. That's wild. Yeah, listen, like so him and Morikawa for me were the two guys that came out of nowhere on this leaderboard. Mm-hmm. Where you're kind of following things, you're watching, and then you look up and you're like, wait a second, is this an old leaderboard? Was this PGA leaderboard? What am I looking at here? So that was interesting to see both of them kind of pop up at the end and be legitimately now in the mix to win the golf tournament. Morikawa less so, but Hovland, like, and he's played well here at Muirfield Village in the past, but he could go out and win this golf tournament on Sunday, which is not something that I even was thinking about 2 hours ago.
One shot off the pace, 5 under par for Victor. The trio at 6 under, we talked about one of them already, David Lipsky, Siwoo Kim, Rory McIlroy. Rory, I thought was more patient, right? We kind of talked about his patience or his ability to just say, my stuff over 72 holes is good enough.
Yep.
It was not his best round of the week in terms of score. It was a 70, shot a 68 on Friday. But to make 3 birdies on the backside, offset with 2 bogeys, get this thing in the house at 70 and just be there as everybody is coming back to you. That's also a skill.
Yeah, he made a par putt of 9 feet. He made a par putt of 10 feet. He made a par putt of 6 feet. He made a birdie putt of 6 feet. A birdie putt of 7 feet, and then another par putt of 9 feet at the last. So he made a lot of those 50-50 balls that we talk about, you know, sorry, my screen's frozen here. Those 50-50 putts that we talk about, that is the difference between being in the final pairing and playing at like noon on Sunday. You know, that's a big difference. And we've watched the Rory runaway bouncing around, you guys will never catch me type victory. This doesn't really feel like that. I don't think Rory's going to shoot 65 on Sunday to just blow away the field, which is almost how you want to see him win. He obviously can win like that, right? It's less obvious that he can win like this, and he doesn't, you know, it's atypical for him to sort of grind out wins. I don't know if it's atypical. It's just not how he's normally kind of done it over the course of his career. And I think it's actually encouraging as it relates to majors, because it's exactly what you said. Like, he has not, we talked about this after the PGA, he has not, it doesn't seem like, trusted himself, trusted that his stuff, even though it's not clicking, he's not like lights out right now. It's like, I tweeted this, his floor, Rick, is a joke. It's so high, and he has to trust that. And I think he kind of is right now. He said, like, listen, when I miss greens, I kind of leaned into it and said, I'm looking forward to trying to hit this shot close. You know, I know I'm going to miss green. It was very grindy. And I thought that was kind of admirable in a way that, you know, he doesn't always get credit for his like perseverance and endurance over the course of his career. But I think that he deserves it for the way he's kind of grinded at, you know, at certain events, and especially this one this week.
Yeah, I agree. And it feels a little like Saturday at Oak Hill, if Brooks like would have came back to the field type of deal, right? Like he's there. He was around. But it never got anything more than that. You know what I'm going to hate is when Rory wins this on Sunday and Phil says, see, I sparked him to victory. I can manipulate these guys more.
You saw that tweet?
Here it is. Phil Mickelson at 11:54 p.m. Last night replied to a clip of Rory McIlroy's, I guess this would have been Friday interview or post-round presser. And says, quote, as worn out as Mickelson was after the Masters and his need for an offseason, LIV would be perfect for him. Problem is, I don't think there's a team that wants him on it because they'd have to deal with all his BS. End quote. I got a lot of thoughts about this.
Give them to me.
Phil Mickelson, one of the greatest golfers to ever play the game, one of the most popular guys to ever play the game, has devolved into a weird Twitter troll now. Other thing is that, okay, so the problem with this is that, yes, let me check my notes here of guys that definitely don't bring any BS. Phil, Bryson, Brooks, Patrick Reed.
This was my take. Yes.
Literally everyone you are associated with at LIV is like the the BS barometer, like the needle of BS. Okay.
The BS brigade.
So all of a sudden, we don't do BS here at Liv. And then the other problem that I have is just like, okay, you want us to take you seriously. You want us to take Liv seriously. You truly, who are you trying to fool that there is not a team that would want one of the greatest players ever to ever live on their team because of the BS that he brings along with it?
Well, I think one of Phil's problems right now is something that everybody who's a little bit too online has experienced from time to time, which is that you think you're making one point, but actually like the sort of frame of the entire thing is saying a different thing about you. Mm-hmm. And Phil's not really understanding that. And I think there's some sadness in that, right? Like I think there's some, it's kind of weird, like that one of the 10, 11, 12 best players ever is tweeting about like Smash GC at 11 PM on a Friday night. It's just like odd. And I was surprised Roy didn't get asked about it in
Well, no, I thought Amanda Renner gave him a chance because she asked like, how are you feeling? Like, are you worn down? Yada, yada. And I thought that that was her way of opening the door to kind of a Rory jab like he gave to Greg Norman after winning what his 21st or whatever.
Yeah, but it's gotten to the point where it's like punching down, right?
Agreed.
And which again is I don't know, like the trolly world of Twitter and Phil being involved in it. It's like Willie Mays on the Mets. It's just like, why are we doing this? Like there's just a ton of sadness there. I would love like a bullet point list of like all of Rory's BS. I think that here's the deal, man. Like Rory over the last year, has he done everything perfectly? No. Should he have said F you Phil on Full Swing? Probably not. Like, there are a number of things that we talked about this with Michael Block, right? If we had to do as many interviews as Michael Block did, you and I would say 10 times as much stupid stuff.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think especially when you're somebody like Rory, who has talked 100 times more than Michael Block over the last year, and he doesn't, like, Rory is not like a Ricky Fowler or a Scottie Scheffler or a Colin Morikawa, where it's like, I'm just gonna like kind of say some words but not really give you my opinion or feeling. Tony Finau said this during Full Swing. He said it to me at the Open. I was interviewing him. He said Rory says a lot of things, he's got a lot of takes, he has a lot of opinions, and I agree with most of them. And I thought that was a really like just very, like there was some brevity in the way that was a really good synopsis of like where Rory's at. And sure, he's like kind of maybe gone down, said a couple of the wrong things, but like the BS that he brings along, what is that even like, what is he even referencing?
Well, I'm not sure Phil Mickelson is in a place to play the holier than thou card of like, okay. Sorry, Phil. Someone said something you don't like. I mean, he is going on Twitter. This is my favorite one. Haven't gambled in years, almost a billionaire now. I call, right? Like Phil is almost a billionaire in the way that I am almost a billionaire, right?
Well,
the odds of Phil Mickelson not gambling in years are like plus a billion.
But what he means by that, Rick, is that they've almost sold the high flyers to
right
Fila or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Too. I've almost sold Rick Rungood to the Saudis as well for $1 billion.
Yeah, to AT&T, almost bought Rick Rungood. You know, like it's. Yeah, I don't know. It's gotten weird. I again like the BS thing. It's like of all the things that you could say about the situation and with Phil's history and like all the laundry list of things that either he's done that haven't come out that people are like if you read certain writers between the lines with some of the Phil stuff, they are telling you a couple of the things that he's done without telling you. Right.
Yeah.
I think you and I have talked about some of these and I'm not going to say them, but go read Jeff Shackelford, go read Eamon Lynch. They'll tell you some of the things that Phil's done over the last few years and without telling you, and they're not great. And so just what is Phil trying to do there? Like, is he trying to get Rory to respond? Is he trying to like gather the Twitter troll army of like live enthusiasts to like fight his battles for him? The whole thing is just so stupid. And it's so emblematic of why I'm so frustrated about the last year, because we should be talking about like, not just this Memorial leaderboard, but throw Brooks and DJ in it as well. Make it even better instead of like, oh, Rory could be on the Smash GC if he hadn't said stupid things over the last year. That's like, it sounds like a fake, it sounds made up, and yet here we are.
And yet here we are on the eve of crowning a Memorial champion. Let's zoom out a little bit here on this leaderboard, because I promised chaos and I promised the boys lining up. So three at six under, Rory McIlroy, Siwoo Kim, David Lipsky. Five at five under, Danny McCarthy, Victor Hovland, Wyndham Clark, back at it again, Lee Hodges, and Mark Hubbard. Another handful at four under. Notables there, Cantlay Hideki, Colin Morikawa. The three unders, that's just three shots off the lead. Couple of notables there. Let's see, Sung J.M., Jordan Spieth. It's where Justin Suh ended up finishing. If you think the twos are live, John Rahm and Ricky Fowler are at two. Also, I just saw the tee times come out. Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm, number one player and number two player in the world, playing together on Sunday. That'll be
sick.
That'll be sick. So, I mean, the game we usually play is how far back is too far back. I mean, this is going to be good luck trying to cover this. We're going to need about 30 more cameras out there, because this thing's going to be wild.
Well, if the ones, Scheffler's at one and Rahm's at two.
That is correct.
So if Scheffler makes, like, let's say he makes three putts. He's made one putt over 9 feet this week, by the way. Keegan Bradley, of all people, made five over 9 feet today. And Scheffler's made one all week. Let's say Scheffler shoots 65 on Sunday. Not out of the question, obviously. He would be at eight.
Yep.
Maybe like in the ballpark, I think
could get into a playoff.
Yeah, I think I would take nine under as a winning score.
So would I. Eight might get you into a playoff. Might.
Yeah, yeah. I think eight's interesting. Scheffler's gonna do this again, isn't he? He's gonna finish like T7.
Yeah, and he's gonna be at seven under, and he'll bogey 18 and shoot 66.
Yeah,
T8 or whatever.
No, 67 and 67. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what's gonna happen. For sure. Like, I wish I could bet on that specific thing. Yeah. So yeah, I think nine under wins it. So if you're Hovland, you got to shoot 68. If you're the threes, you got to shoot 66. But I mean, those numbers are out there. It's not like they're not being shot. They're being shot every day. It's just a matter. And there's so many guys. There's so many rips at it with how many guys are at the top of the board that somebody's going to do it and then make Rory, Siwoo, those guys go get it. So it's going to be fun. I was fired up about the Phoenix final round, obviously the majors, but this is like as much as I've looked forward to a final round this year.
Yeah, this is cool. I don't have the Justin Ray tweet in front of me, but like basically this is like as many guys as you're ever going to have within four shots of the lead. So enjoy it, right? Like this is from that perspective of just how many guys are within X number of shots. This is like a huge number. We don't get a lot. So enjoy it. The odds.
I was going to say, I do have a stat for you here. This is why I was late to our pod, because I was deep in the sauce on this. I'm just going to read it to you. If Rory wins Memorial tomorrow, he ties DJ and Gary Player for 26 on the all-time PGA Tour wins list, 24. Do you want to guess how many wins? This is, I need to recalculate these because I was doing this math pretty quickly, but do you want to guess how many win or how many starts it took Gary Player to get to 24 on the PGA Tour?
Oh God. Okay. Before I answer that, what does Gary say his total number of wins is, like 168 or something like that?
I think he says it's like 1,068.
How many starts did it take for Gary Player to win 24 times on the PGA Tour?
Mm-hmm. So he ended with, I took off all of his starts past his last win. So he got to 24. That was his last one. It happened in 1978. I took off everything after that. So that was however many more starts. So how many did it take him to get to 24?
I will say 200.
Okay, it's 323.
Wow, okay. So that is, well, I was giving him credit for being more of a elite. So 320, what was it, 323? 7%.
It's good. I mean, like really good. So DJ has also won 24. Do you know how many starts it took him?
Okay, so if now I use Gary Player as 320, so DJ, if DJ wins 10%, which I don't think many guys win 10%. I think Rom's like 12. So let's call it 260.
277.
Okay. Okay.
And then Rory, do you know what start this is for him on the PGA Tour?
I don't, but basically since 2010, right? So 13 years, call it 18 a year, 18 times 13.
234. 230.
That was pretty good.
So he would be 50 quicker than DJ and almost 100 quicker than Gary Player. And I think it gets lost, right? I think some of the Rory stuff gets lost because he hasn't won a major in 9 years. People on Twitter, I am very aware of what his major record is. You don't need to keep reminding me. He's very aware of what his major record is. But some of this gets lost just because of Tiger and like Rory's generationally, historically great. And I don't think that majors are the only way to measure that. They're a way and they're an important way, maybe the most important way. But let's not let that sort of overshadow how great Rory's been for the last 15 years.
Right. Correct. Do we have the odds board? Because Rory is the favorite. No surprise there. But plus 250. Siwoo, who is also at 600 par, plus 750. The other man at 600 is David Lipsky. He's 16-1. But you get Victor at 8.5. Patrick Cantlay at 12. Wyndham Clark at 14. I mean, I'll tell you what. I think you said it earlier. Cantlay is 12-1. He was 10-1 before the tournament started. He is 2 back and he has done nothing to help himself.
You're right. Cantlay, sorry, I was looking up something for producer Josh here, but Cantlay is, I just wrote this actually. Cantlay would be, I would not touch this because it's going to be insane. But if I had to, like, if you forced me to make a pick at these numbers, Cantlay's my guy. He's second in the field in strokes gained tee to green. Hasn't made anything. He's only 2 back. It's not like he's 5 back. So I don't like any of this, but if I have to like something, I like Cantlay at 12-1.
This is going to be like NASCAR at Daytona, right? Oh. It's like 5 wide and everybody's trying to avoid the big one.
Yeah, let's go. I'm fired up for it. Producer Josh just asked us behind the scenes, how many starts did it take the cat to get to... to 24 well, PGA Tour victories.
What's 24 times five? Because or maybe times four because he was winning like 25%. So I will. My guess is 108.
99.
What a sicko.
230 for Rory. Generationally great. Better than Gary Player. Better than Dustin Johnson. And Tiger did it in 99.
That's
it's a joke.
So stupid.
Yeah, it's.
We're obviously like never gonna see. We're never gonna see that again, right?
It's filthy. It's so filthy. His best percentage ever, Rick. He got it to. So he had won. This is unofficial, but he had won. The best percentage that I see is like 28%.
Yeah, I thought he won 7. So that okay. That yeah.
He won 71 of his first 250.
So sick.
And that was 28.4%. There might be a higher percentage in there, but that's the highest that I see.
God,
it's nuts.
So good.
Yeah. Wow. And again, that sort of overshadows some of the other stuff, which is part of the deal. But it's just it's unfortunate for.
Tiger ruins golf stats and Tiger ruins expectations.
No doubt. And that's why, yeah, that's why it's just hard. I mean, what DJ did is like, man, DJ's like historically awesome. And it came in the wake and at the same time as Tiger. So you're like, yeah, DJ's pretty good. You're like, no, you don't understand. Like DJ is unbelievable. Like he's so good. So yeah, I love stuff like that. I could talk about this all day.
Oh, well, good thing we get paid to do just that. We'll be back on Sunday night to tell you who the winner is going to be. Quick, playoff or no playoff?
No playoff. I think that when it's bunched up like this, somebody always just kind of noses ahead at the end.
I agree. All right, we'll be back to see who wins it. A million guys within a couple shots of the lead, including a bunch of phenomenal superstars. Big thanks, producer Josh, does all the hard work behind the scenes. Kyle Porter, available on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.